Mate, he's a pro. Man, he's a pro.
He's a pro. Yeah, I can relax now. That was the most not stressed or nervous, but it's like, you know, a big name and someone who does their own podcast and does it well and interviews people and talks to people well. And it's like,
No,
gotta
but
be
this is the
on
thing.
form.
There's a thing about American people in general that we had on this podcast. Like, American people are just so much better at talking.
Yeah.
Or maybe it's because the ones that we interview are the ones that also talk for a living, or they have a podcast or a YouTube channel or whatever. So maybe that helps. But 100% success rate on like the
Yeah.
ability of talking and being entertaining and maintaining a conversation like this is it's great. It's great to see. Definitely much better than the French, and probably a bit better than the English. But I think I would rate them US first, UK, and then French last. I'm trying my best to get to you guys.
But we have just finished speaking with the wonderful Dave Gerhardt, and yeah, that was awesome. We're both like big fans. We're slightly nervous about doing this one, but
Yeah, we the 2024 we're upping our game on the guest side of things. But yeah, no, Dave has been a big resource of knowledge in both of our career over the years. So it was an honor to have him in the podcast. And yeah, it was very, very, very nice episode talking about B2B marketing, his career, obviously Exit 5, his community, and the content that he's creating for that. Talk a bit about podcasting, and I kind of like the biggest topics in B2B marketing, and all rounder episode. Loved it. Loved it.
yeah, it was very good. We think you will love it too. So we hope you enjoy. Oh, and remember, it's normally what Yo says. Follow the podcast. What else? Listen to it. Well, you obviously are listening to it. Follow the podcast, share
Yeah,
it.
listen to it and share it and leave a 5-star review,
That's it.
because the 5-star review, they work so well, man. Like, if people listening to this were leaving 5-star review on a weekly basis, we would be top five marketing podcast every week. Because when I go to that bloody app store and and I do five or six phones myself, we go top three straight away. So we only need five or six people to do a review. So if you're listening to this, you haven't done a review yet, please do a review. We're bringing the heat with the big guests now. So that's the small ask from us. All right, enjoy the episode.
What's up, guys? Hey,
Hey Dave, how
Dave.
you doing?
Good, good.
Where are you calling from? Where are you now?
I am in Vermont on the east coast of the US.
Oh, very
Nice.
nice.
We're both in London, as you might know.
Little nighttime session for the boys.
Yeah. That's how we roll.
Exactly.
All right. All right.
Exactly. The kids are asleep. All good. Ready to
Okay.
talk.
For now.
Yeah, they're
Oh,
asleep for now, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, what is such a boring question to ask for like these conversations, but what time is it there,
No, it's not boring at all. I
Dave?
Are you kidding me? I ask that all the time. It's 3:20.
Yeah,
Okay.
yeah.
So,
Home from school time.
afternoon, yeah, my daughter just got off the bus. So I got her set up and then came and ran over here and made sure everything looks good and ready to rock.
Excellent, excellent. Sounds
You're
great.
good, you're
This is
good.
the most professional mic setup we've had so far on a guest side, so I'm super happy
All
about
right, well,
that.
good, good. I've had this laying around, but I haven't used it in a while and decided to just bring it, put it back in play. So.
Perfect. Sounds great.
Well, Dave, welcome to the podcast. In Growth We Trust. We're leveling up our guests, I guess, in the last few weeks.
Oh,
We're
boy.
going up and up and up. Yeah, no, I'm hyping you up now. No, it's great. It's great to have you. I personally been watching and reading your content for a long time. So it is. I was saying to Jake, I feel like I might choke No way.
No, you won't choke. What do you got behind you? You like to spin a little music or something? What's that behind you? You got a little DJ game behind?
Okay. No, it's not DJ. It's just like
just vinyl, you like to play music.
Some vinyl. Yeah. All right. Some hip hop, some jazz, nice. Things like that.
Yeah. Killer Mike album of the year.
Yeah. It did. What do you think about that?
It's okay. Not for me. Yeah. It's pretty good. I saw a post and somebody commented on it and was like, I've never been anywhere in my life where someone's like, yo, put the new Killer Mike on. And I agree, but that's okay. It doesn't mean that, you know, I was listening to it a little bit today. I'm trying to give him another chance. No disrespect, Michael, if you're listening.
I'm sure he is, yeah.
I've been thinking the same. All I saw is that apparently got arrested on the way out, and I don't know why. I didn't dig into it. I don't know what happened.
That's crazy. That's for our different show. We'll start a hip hop conspiracy show or something.
Yeah, we will. But I saw you've got. Have you got multiple podcasts or multiple shows? Like, is it like a golf one that you're doing?
Yeah, a buddy of mine and I started a golf one, and then I have my Exit 5 one. I've dibbled and dabbled in this medium for a while, and so like if I have a new idea, my kind of bias is to launch a podcast. But I just have two. I have this golf one that I'm doing with a buddy of mine, and then I have Exit 5. I have other ideas, but there's just not enough time. I think after this Exit 5 stage of my life, I could see a podcast being like me finding a way to turn that into my full-time job in some way. But for now, I'm kind of using it as like a means to an end as part of the business. And then I'm scratching an itch with a buddy of mine on the side.
Do you suggest it as a kind of B2B tactic, the brands you work with?
Yeah, I do. I think it depends on a lot of factors, like the topic, the host, the goals. So I kind of have this belief that any channel, any marketing channel can work for B2B. And I do think sometimes it's about like focusing on one or two. And I think a lot of times there's too many options. And like when you have constraints, you can do better. But for me, I enjoy having these types of conversations. I've done them for a while. I feel like you could roll me out of bed or wake me up in the middle of the night and I could find a way to interview somebody and have a conversation. And so I've kind of like leaned into that as a format. And then I also think just from a content standpoint, it does create a lot of leverage really quickly. And I actually think, especially now with tools like ChatGPT, you can do something like get a transcript from an hour conversation and get articles from that, get emails from that, get social copy from that. So like I do like it as that kind of anchor approach, but I do think there's another school of thought too that's like, oh, you can't just do an interview podcast like Dave just interviewing CMOs, like, you know, not everyone could, that's not a good strategy for most people. And I think the answer to that is just really, it depends. I think it depends on who the host is. You guys know you have a podcast, right? Like this is actually a skill. I'm sure you've had people come on before and like you ask them a question and they just kind of like answer it and then pause.
Yeah.
And you're like, come on, man, like snap out of it. Like, I want to have a conversation with you. I want to hang out. I think it's like anything. You got to find your angle.
Yeah,
that's true.
It's a tricky one to distribute, right? That's the hardest thing. But then also, there's two sides of that. It's like one of the only mediums where, to an outsider, there's absolutely you have no idea if there's one listener or a million listeners for this thing. So, as from a business perspective, if you position it as like the leading podcast in your niche, then no one can say otherwise.
Sure. That part is true. You don't know the audience size of it. It's hard. The distribution part is hard because their podcast is hard to grow because it's not like a direct response channel. Like, I might see a clip from this podcast, but I'm not going to stop what I'm doing right then and there and like cue that up and listen to it. And so even like when we promote our podcast now, the Exit 5 podcast, I've stopped even like putting links to it. We just use the clips and I kind of treat it as like an always on awareness play. And like, eventually you're going to be like, oh, I got to go listen to that episode and you're going to save it. And marketers don't like that because we want to try to figure out, like, I was having this conversation last week with Dan, who I brought on as COO of Exit 5. And he's like, oh man, he's like looking at the numbers and all this stuff. And he's like, podcast downloads were down in December. Like, we need to do more. And I'm like, first of all, relax. I've been doing a podcast for a long time. This always happens. November and December, it goes way down. Mm-hmm. And secondly, it's very hard to like say, you guys know this, it's very hard to be like, this month we're going to go hard on the podcast. We're going to drive more listeners. You're laughing because you've probably been through it, but like, there's very few levers that you can pull. It's about consistency over time. And shoot, there's podcasts that, there's this one golf podcast that I listened to, it's called Shotgun Start. It's been out for 5 years. And just 6 months ago, I started listening. I don't know why, I just got on. Yeah. And so it's a tricky channel to figure out how to grow. And that's why I think if you want to do it, you have to be kind of in it for the long run and want to do it because you believe it's a good channel to like create content. You build relationships. There's a lot of other value beyond like the how many people are listening.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely. I want to rewind a little bit and give you the chance to introduce yourself to the people who might not know you. Audience is really UK based. I've no doubt that you've got a lot of UK B2B marketers and marketers, you know, in your community in Exit 5. But if you could like tell us like the what couple of minutes intro of like who Dave is and where you came from in like marketing.
Sure. I'm a rap hip hop and R&B critic, most importantly, above all else. I'm an avid golfer. I'm a dad. I'm a husband. I live in Vermont in the United States. And I spent most of my career as working in B2B SaaS, B2B tech companies. I came up as a PR intern. And I rose through the ranks of PR intern to product marketing associate to marketing manager. Eventually I got in at this company called Drift, and I kind of rose from marketing manager to VP of marketing there. Eventually left and came back and was chief brand officer for a little bit. And I was chief marketing officer at a company called Privy. But I've spent a decade working in B2B SaaS and have simultaneously been writing about the things that I'm doing in marketing on LinkedIn through a podcast. And 2 years ago, I decided to quit my job and go work for myself. And I was going to do 50% consulting, like working one-on-one with companies. My background as a marketer is, you know, people come from all kind of different schools of marketing. I'm not like the hardcore, like paid person or demand gen person. I'm much more of like the product marketing, brand, storytelling, positioning, messaging. That's my strength. And so I was going to do consulting, working with a bunch of companies, working with a bunch of B2B startups. I did that for a little bit. While that was happening, I launched this private podcast and paid community for B2B marketers, and it grew really fast. And before I knew it, I had 1,000 members. And I had an opportunity to basically turn that into its own company. And so now I do that. It's called Exit 5. It's exit5.com. It's a membership site for B2B marketers. We have about 3,000 paying members there. We have a newsletter. We have a podcast. And the way that I describe it is we're building a media company, but the media company is focused on helping B2B marketers grow their career. So just like you might read a website about music or golf or fitness or whatever, we're doing that, but we're focusing on this area that I have a lot of experience and connections and, you know, content in over the years, and that's B2B marketing. And it's gone really well so far, and I've been able to basically quit my job working for somebody else to build this company. This year, hired my first, for about a year, I was telling everyone that I'm a solopreneur, this is the life, I'm never going to have teammates ever again. And then I had this, you know, epiphany moment probably 6 months to a year ago that like actually the way here is to hire people and to build a team and to scale this thing because I don't want to be Gary Vee. I don't want to be Russell Brunson. I don't want to be like teaching and standing on stage talking about marketing forever. I love doing the marketing. I love being a creator and an entrepreneur. And so I want to shift from this being like the Dave show where like it's Dave's hot marketing takes. So, oh, wow. With thousands of members now and a big email newsletter and a big community and a podcast, we actually have the opportunity to be like an industry, a source of education for people beyond Dave. And so that's been a big shift that we're trying to make this year. I hired two full-time employees and now we have a small team. And that's how I spend most of my time today.
Congrats, amazing. Man. That's it. Yeah, that's huge. Big. I think the first time I came across your content was in your first time at Drift. And it was my first time in B2B marketing. I had one stint in my 10 years marketing career in B2B, and that was at that time. And we actually signed up to Drift at the time. And I think that's when I started posting on LinkedIn as well, because I was seeing what you were doing. I was like, damn, like there's something there in like just sharing freely what you're learning and your challenges, your success, whatever it is, how you view marketing to create leverage as an individual in a company and like become like the cheerleader or like kind of like the person that would express like just their thoughts, you know, what most employees don't.
Yeah. Well, we created a massive, what I would call a PR channel, and other people, companies in our space are like, you know, writing press releases and putting them out on the wire and try to pitch journalists, and that landscape was kind of shrinking. And we built this massive organic audience through myself, this David, the CEO. We started a podcast. We were sharing what we were doing on Twitter and LinkedIn as we were growing the company. And I went on a couple of years ago, I wrote a book basically about this concept called Founder Brand, which is basically like, instead of doing traditional PR and waiting for people to write about you and cover your company, we have all those tools today, whether it's LinkedIn, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, you know, and this explaining this concept to somebody who's like 20 years old is like, well, no kidding. But like anybody can build an audience in a niche. I'm researching cold plunges right now, and I'm watching videos of people who have, you know, hundreds of thousands of followers in this niche of cold plunges, right? So of course this will work for something like B2B marketing. And so that's what we did. And David, who is the CEO, had this belief of like, hey, we can kind of create our own media and content machine. It's great if we do get people to write about us, but let's go direct and let's build an audience on LinkedIn. And nobody was using LinkedIn. LinkedIn was not much different than Twitter or any other social media site, but nobody was really using it to publish content. At that time, they were kind of only using it to like, I met Jake at an event and he sends me a connection request after, hello, Dave, it was great meeting you. And I'm like, oh, do I know this guy? Do I not accept, reject? But it became a content platform. And we started publishing content there. We were selling to B2B marketers. Everybody who has a job in B2B is on LinkedIn in some form, because selfishly that is all of our resumes. That you have your resume, but LinkedIn is kind of like your digital resume. And really quickly we gained a lot of traction on LinkedIn, and no other company was doing it. The company was growing really fast in the early part of when I was there. And the company had so much energy and employees were like so passionate about being there. It felt like they were all part of something bigger than themselves. And so people were like, hey, I see you guys writing on LinkedIn. Like, I want to do it too. And so we got engineers and product managers and customer support reps, like all writing on LinkedIn, and just created this massive like PR machine. Today, that's saturated now. I see companies.
I was going to ask, today is like, what do you think of the, because I think you were early on the at least in Europe, like the founders brand, I think is definitely catching up in the UK now. There's more and more of them. And now you've got ghostwriters and like, you know, I don't know who knows writes the, like who writes the post now. It's not even the founders anymore, but it's like this whole like team around founders that are like social, you know, media team. Basically,
there's so many little agencies that have spun out. I'm not saying it's because of the book, like the book did well in a small way, but there's so many people who now like do content creation for founders and ghostwrite and make video clips. It has become a whole thing.
As obviously, Dave, someone who has built an audience and gone through that, was there like an inflection point where you suddenly felt you like felt the audience that you had, like it was having an impact on either the business or You know, because I'm not like a hard number, but does it get to a point where you're like, okay, now I can use this for my own?
Yeah, we used to joke. David started this. We used to joke like we had a podcast and it was called Seeking Wisdom, and sales people on the sales team would like have a meeting with someone and be like, "Yeah, I just talked to Jake, and they said they're gonna buy Drift and they're huge Seeking Wisdom podcast fans," and they would like write that in Slack, and we'd be like, "Cool." Or at the time we were working in Boston and our office was in this big fancy mall. And we would be walking and getting a coffee and someone would be like, "Yo, Seeking Wisdom." And it was like, they saw David and
that's cool.
He's a very recognizable guy. There's not a lot of like tall, bald, brown tech founders. And he had, you know, he looked the same as on social media. And so people saw him, they knew that's David Cancel. And so we had those small little micro moments and we'd get a DM from someone. We'd get a tweet. An email, like those tiny little moments. And it got to the point where we'd joke about it. All these other companies would be like, "How do you measure the ROI of a podcast?" David would screenshot all these things and put them in the Slack channel in the company. He'd be like, "How?" He would at me, be like, "At Dave, how are we going to measure the ROI of this podcast?" And so it was cool to be working on this social media. He taught me all the stuff that I know now, but like it was cool to be doing this social media and podcast and content stuff with David, who was never worried about the ROI of it. He knew the game and he believed in it so deeply where, you know, I talk to a lot of people now through Exit 5 or whoever, where I might write something and they're like, "Well, easy for you to say, like my boss doesn't get this." And I totally agree. And that sucks. I didn't have that. He was like really up on his game when it came to content, podcasting, social media. And we felt that feedback loop really quickly. And that led to like, so many things, because once you start to get that, what you learn is you get this feedback loop going. And so might rant on something, like just riffing on a podcast and like, "Oh, that's interesting. Okay, what about that?" That podcast soundbite becomes something that was like, "Hey, you know how you said that thing on the podcast? Like, you should write that on Twitter." And then he'd write that on Twitter and bunch of responses like, "Huh, there's something here. Okay, he's speaking at a conference in 2 months. Hey, that tweet that about this topic, like we should write that deck and like we'll pitch that topic." It just connects all the pieces when you figure out social media. But it's hard because a lot of this breaks down inside of a business. Unless you have a David Cancel or like somebody like me working with you on it, everybody wants to know, "Well, we've been doing it for 2 weeks. Where are the leads, right? Where are the leads? How are we going to measure this?" And it just doesn't work like that.
And you mentioned earlier, like it's... the landscape today, so it's definitely becoming saturated, more and more saturated. Like, is there a way to still differentiate yourself with a podcast or something like that, where you don't look and sound like 100 other B2B podcasts in your niche? You know,
yeah.
I think you had a post recently on LinkedIn where you talk about that, and I thought that was quite interesting. And like, I think you spoke
to someone else. Somebody goes. Somebody, I don't know where this comes from, but some people repeat this a lot. I think one option on the niche. What do you all say over there? How do you say it? Niche?
You say niche, but I mean
niche.
We've been Americanized, so most people say
such
niche.
Classy fellas. The niche.
Is that a French word, yeah?
La niche, it's a French word, yeah.
Are you French? Do you know that?
Yeah, I'm French. Okay. Yeah.
He knows that he's French, yeah.
I think that one take on it is the niche can be you, the niche can be you. So you could take an exact topic that somebody has talked about, but you do it your way. You are funnier, higher production. We all have different personalities and charisma and intonation. I think that is one. People don't like that because it's harder to articulate. It's not like a playbook.
Yeah.
You know, but everybody's got that friend. I got a friend of mine who works in like banking. Like, man, you could have such a good YouTube channel, but he doesn't want to do that. Right. But so I think that's one possibility.
Yeah.
The other is, there's loads of different content formats and variations. Like, you know, there's always going to be new TV shows. There's always going to be new YouTube channels. I think that is it saturated? Yes, but I think that you can find opportunities to like part the sea and find your way.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be an interview podcast. It could be like more entertaining or have a different angle or something.
Yeah, I mean, look, you, the three of us could like set a timer for 10 minutes and we could just brainstorm like 20 different concepts. Because you guys know podcasting, I've done it for a while. We could just riff on like, we could come up with 20 concepts, sure.
Yeah.
Doesn't have to be an interview. But I also don't necessarily agree with the advice that an interview podcast can't work. I totally think it can. You could follow the same, let's say you sell to finance. And you interview CFOs at companies, right? But you're great at it. You have great conversations. You're very funny and charismatic, and you have a deep learning style. Like, look at Joe Rogan versus Lex Friedman, right? Mm-hmm. They both essentially talk for 2 or 3 hours. They just have a different way of doing it, and both of them have grown massive audiences. My dog's being annoying.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, it's interesting, right? Because no one's going to say, "Oh, the movie market is saturated, so we're not going to make another action movie again." It's like,
yeah,
so
what, I think that's just a weak. I think that's what's fun, right? Isn't that what's fun to you guys? Like, that's the fun challenge. Yeah. Like, let's come up with something, right? Or like, don't do the interview podcast. Do 10-minute highly edited things, or like, we sell to finance instead of doing an interview show with CFOs. We're going to ask every CFO 3 questions, and it's going to be like one related to like trends, business outlook, something you're doing inside your company. And that's going to be our show. Mm-hmm. I saw this guy, what the heck's his name? Alex Lieberman. He was one of the founders of Morning Brew. Yeah. I saw like he blew up on TikTok a couple of years ago, and he came up with this cool concept of he sits down on a bench with somebody in New York or wherever and asks them to pitch their startup in 1 minute, and they chop it up into like a TikTok style video.
Cool.
I follow this guy on Instagram. His name is Body by Mark. I like working out and I like fitness. Seen this guy? You know what I'm talking about?
I can imagine what he does though.
He goes up to random people. It's kind of creepy, but sometimes it works. He sees random like fit looking people in the streets and he'll be like, "Hey, you look like you're super fit. What do you do for your workout?" And I love that stuff because they'll be like, "Oh, I run 3 days a week. I do this." And it creates this amazing content. Or I follow this other guy on YouTube called Kay Bogues. And he's just like this minimalist workout guy. And he just literally films himself doing pull-ups. And then he talks over that video. This is the fun part to me. I think there's endless variations. Cool. I think that the niche is crowded unless you're not creative about it, and I think that's exactly the opportunity. But to the thing that we talked about earlier, I don't think it has to be a podcast. It could be a podcast, it could be a LinkedIn page, it could be a Twitter account, it could be a TikTok account. I think it could be any of those things. Where you're going to fall down is when you try to do all 10 of them, and I've made that mistake a bunch of times. Like, why can't I ever get a YouTube channel to grow? Well, because I haven't actually created a real YouTube first content strategy. I've always just been like, oh, I recorded this interview with these guys, upload the video to YouTube, and that's why that video has 71 views. That's it's not a real strategy.
That's true.
It's there's a account I've seen on TikTok where this guy just chooses a random object like a coat hanger, and it's like, how many coat hangers can I hang on? So we like one and it was snap.
I've seen that.
It's so good. So that's the perfect example, right? I just come up with something crazy. I actually wrote a post on LinkedIn the other day, which was like, if you're going to be creating content, there's like four areas that where you need to be strong in, like consistency, creation, distribution, and ideation. It's like different businesses and people will be stronger in other ones than others. And it's like, I think when it comes to standing out there, you need to be strong in ideation, in my opinion, to be a content creator. And then
totally agree that's my strength is in the ideation and the like ideation and hooks and storytelling. Where I'm not super technical or understanding like narrative and video production, and I wouldn't be good at that. And so if I wanted to start like a high-end YouTube channel, like if I wanted to start a YouTube channel, I would have 2 options right now. I would either need to like hire someone to like go film me in a scenario. Like if I want to start a golf YouTube channel, I'd have to high end, spend my money, hire somebody to help me do it and film and whatever, or low end, like start with my iPhone and just kind of do it a scrappy way. I got hundreds of ideas of how we could make that work, but I'm not the like high production out of the gate guy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think you had an interesting post recently about not copying Mr. Beast playbook. Now we're talking about YouTube.
Can I just tell you why I wrote that? Because I hate
like
there's like this like business porn category of like seven Floated. Lessons I learned from Mr. Beast growing to blah blah blah, and it's like or like how Beast Burger was so successful. It was so successful because he has a gazillion followers on YouTube. That stuff is just not that helpful. And yeah, I don't like reading it. I get that it gets clicks, but I don't like that game. And so I don't think that's helpful for anybody where my methodology is much more like, go, let's start shipping today. I'm okay with being very embarrassed by my V1 because I know that it's just a game of feedback and we just got to like get going, not tweak. Okay, got a signal there, edit, adjust. Now that might be, we should all take a personality test or something because I'm sure that there's something in my personality profile where like I'm okay with that. Not everybody is the same. Some people do want a much more plan. Oh my gosh, it took me 5 weeks to make this video and I'm finally gonna press play. I'm much more comfortable just like flipping my phone around and like spitting an idea into the camera. So
And then
what side are you guys on that coin, by the way?
I think the same as you, honestly, but if I spend days or weeks on something and I put it out there and inevitably you do 100 things and 90 of them will be shit, then it hurts, right? And you're like, I'm not going to be consistent at this if I'm spending months on this getting 2 views. Whereas if you just do it quickly, and then for me, maybe that's the lazy attitude, but that's the side that I'm on definitely.
I'm the same. And that's why I tend to, always been working with, in a startup kind of environment, so things can get shipped quickly. And when the company I used to work with got to the scale up kind of phase, and you throw an idea and then it's like there's always someone who's like, wait, we need to talk about that, and then wait, another meeting, talk about that, and then the idea is like, and then after 2 weeks you just give up, like, we're not going to do this.
let me give you so. I totally agree, that's the startup side of things. Let me give you an example of that. So I've been thinking about doing an event for Exit 5, like in-person event. And we're still like working out the details of it, but we're pretty much going to do it. We're probably going to do it in the fall at some time. And I tweeted about it the other day. I tweeted like, we're doing an event. I can't wait. I'm so something like that. Some teaser, right? With no plans. I haven't put a down payment down. We don't have a date yet. We don't have a venue.
Yeah.
But I got like 20 messages from people who were like, hell yeah, when you do it, I'm there. And like, that is so validating. That now gives me the like, even if you're on the edge of something, I'm like, fuck yeah, okay, I should go do this. Like, I feel better about doing it now. And now if that idea fails, I'm okay with that. And the reason that I even wrote a book in the first place was because I talked about this kind of like lane of content for a while. And a bunch of people were like, oh, you should write, have you ever written more on this? And I literally created the whole book through the community that I had. I had an example. I came up with the title. I came up with the concept. And so I think you can test those ideas. And one of the new guys on our team like saw the tweet and he was like, "We're doing an event? What?" And I was like, "Yeah, man. Sorry. This is how I work. Like, we might not do an event, but like, I have good feedback on this already. And that's just the way that I like to operate." And when you have some followers and an audience online, you can do that, whether you have an email list or whatever. I've heard the author Mark Manson talk about this. When he hires, he's like, I only hire people who are on my email list because I know that they're going to be like a fit and know my business. And so I'll send out an email and be like, I'm thinking about hiring a new video editor, fill this form out and like submit some criteria. And then you can just go through that and you might not hire somebody, but you're going to go through all the steps and like, you're basically able to like, I'm not saying things are not going to fail, but in that example of like taking 10 weeks to ship something, you're basically like giving yourself a little bit of insurance.
Yeah. It's like user research, right? You have an audience, so you use them to validate your concept the same way you have a product and you use them to validate the next feature.
I was just thinking about that today because we're thinking about, I'm thinking about like, what's the like 10x play of Exit 5? Is it grow the biggest community of marketers in the world? No, I don't want to do that. But there's something there. And what's the, you know, I see founders building new products all the time, and you got to go out and you got to do 5 customer interviews and you got to research this persona. And I'm like, we're sitting on right now this audience of B2B marketers in a particular niche. We have a lot of research already. I haven't done research, but being in the community and doing podcasts and having this newsletter and having an inbox and DMs, like, I could tell you the 4 or 5 things that they're interesting in, and I've never held one user interview ever. It's just a tremendous advantage to have that audience first. And so back to why was Mr. Beast successful in launching other products? Because he had an audience first.
Yeah.
Plain and simple.
Definitely. Yeah, definitely. We've got the same, to go back to that, we've got the same kind of content business porn in the UK with, do you know the podcast, The Diary of CEO?
Stephen Bartlett. Oh, do I? Does anybody make a better trailer than Stephen Bartlett?
Yeah, that's true.
It's so,
I was practically dead. But then it's nuts. It's nuts. And then I'm watching the interview the whole time. I'm like, where was that? They didn't ever pay off on that hook. This is just this guy's just doing a book tour. Oh, great. He talked to Alex Hormozi on another podcast.
It's mad. Yeah. So all the things is the same. It's like, I'll do, you know, like the 7 things that Steven's done to grow his podcast or like to grow his, like, and it's like, come on, man. He's got like a team of 30 people and he spends like £1 million a year on the
right. And didn't he, and this is not to knock his success at all. I don't want people to twist that at all. But like, didn't he build a successful like marketing agency? And so he made a bunch of money. He was very successful before starting the podcast.
Yeah.
If you're starting from that position and then you're like, I'm going to start a podcast, then like, this is the hardest part about starting a podcast, by the way, though. If you're going to go the guest approach, it's very hard to start like if you have a no name podcast and you can't like pay for guests or have a budget, it's very hard to get big name people on there. So
yeah, that's true. That's our excuse, is that we interview people that are doing the work. So, and they're always happy to come on, you know, so.
I like that.
the interesting thing I thought about the Mr. Beast kind of concept of don't copy that is whenever there's something new, like a new channel, like TikTok, for instance, there's this whole industry that is then birthed on top of that. So with Facebook, it was like the Facebook ads industry and the ad tech platforms, all that kind of stuff. With TikTok, it was the clipping agencies, etc. It's like, there is that same thing can be applied to anybody successful when it's like, there's a millionaire business that's built off on top of just another person who's also a millionaire. And they're all just not really selling anything. It's just like the course to be the next Mr. Beast. And then you take that course and they're like, oh, I'm going to do the same thing. Or the different course to be the next Mr. Beast. And it's just like this house of cards that's just waiting for when everyone's paying money and no one's actually doing anything or learning anything.
Yeah. People don't like you if you sell a course.
Well, I mean, back in the very, very early days of my career, there was a website, I think it's still around, called Warrior Forums. It's like an affiliate black hat kind of forum.
Yeah.
And there was thousands of people on that. And all it was people would launch this is the affiliate scheme with the least amount of impact, at least amount of input and the biggest returns.
Oh,
and
I love that.
1,000 people would buy it. And then it just, you know, they'd read it or they wouldn't even read it. It just like created this addiction to like, there'll be some, if I buy enough of these, there'll be one that is truly just like, I click one button, I become a millionaire. And it's just crazy. It's crazy.
I do. I said that kind of tongue in cheek, but I do see there's a lot of people online who kind of roll their eyes at people who create and sell courses. And
yeah.
I think there's obviously a bad way to do it, like a skeezy way of doing it. Like that example. But to me, I've bought so many courses that people wouldn't consider courses. Like when my wife and I were trying to like sleep train our daughter when she was born, we paid some $99 internet course. That's the same thing.
Followed some woman
on Instagram. She put out amazingly helpful content. She's like, hey, I have an ebook that's, you know, $49 or have we bought that. I have bought countless lifting and workout programs over the years that are courses or recipes and menus. I think that where people get caught up in is it's like it's the online marketing guru courses that people don't like. It's that world.
Yeah. Or the investing, you know, I'm just out for a walk in out the front of my mansion and I just got a ding on my phone. Oh, I just made 500 grand on my last trade. That's the ones that, and there's just so many people doing that. I'm like, they must be working because there's so many people doing that.
You mentioned that you've got your finger on the pulse for B2B marketers and like what's important to them at the moment. Do you mind sharing a bit more about those topics that are important for the industry?
Sure.
Move into that.
I think a couple of them are evergreen. I think they're not going to go away. And so I think one of them, or I'll just rattle off a couple. I think measuring marketing's impact in a B2B organization is hard. And I specify B2B because I don't want to dumb down like selling a consumer product to only this, but if it's higher volume, higher frequency, much more direct response, you're selling t-shirts or clothing, the marketing efforts there, and those companies do brand marketing. I don't want to take away from that, but the marketing's impact there is much easier to measure.
Yeah.
Where on the B2B side, you might be selling a product that is six figures. It takes 2 months to onboard. 12 teammates need to be involved. It needs to go through procurement. It needs to go through security and compliance. And somebody's going to, you know, put their neck on the line to like implement that thing inside of the company. And so the buying cycle, the buying process is much different. And so there's a whole handful of issues in there that are never going to go away. Those are topics people want. And so that is like how to set the right goals, how to create the right marketing plan, how to work with sales, how to pitch your marketing plan to the CEO and CFO, how to manage up, how to basically evangelize marketing inside of the company. What's the split between short-term and long-term marketing? That's kind of like the mega thing for me. That's very much like cover up all the channels, AI, TikTok, YouTube, whatever. Most of it is in there. That is like where most of the questions come out. Now, then there's another bucket, which is more channel specific. And so like, hey, what people want to know, what's working on LinkedIn? What are you doing for email these days? What podcast is work? Like people want to know all the channels, all the channels, what tactics are working. And this is, marketers will be obsessed with this forever. What's the best time to post? What's the best time to post? How long should your post be? Right.
Yeah.
I'm the same way. Like I look at that stuff. I'm using like this LinkedIn scheduling tool and I'm like, what's the best time to post on LinkedIn? Cause it's all over the place. And that they say like 11 o'clock my time. Yeah. And I'm like, that's crazy. I'm sleeping then. And I've been doing it the last couple of days and the posts have blown up and I'm like, oh yeah, there's a whole other world besides my time zone. So that stuff's already always interesting. And then the other one is AI, obviously. And yeah, that's just the biggest trend right now, I think, in all of business. And I don't think it's overrated. I think it's, in some cases, I think people are sleeping on it still a little bit in the ways that it can be used as a marketer and content creator or a research assistant.
That's a good roundup.
I think it's evergreen, man. People want to know, we want to share from each other. Like, what are you doing? I love hearing. That's the stuff that I love. Like we go out to lunch and you tell me like, here's how we do our podcast this way. And we actually do it this way. And we send it on this. That's the stuff that I'm always going to be interested in. People just kind of like to talk shop with other marketers. And what's cool is like, we've created a forum for people to do that. And so it's not like groundbreaking, but we're connecting peers and people who have the similar profession. And when you connect them together, they're going to share ideas and share feedback and help each other. And I got a new idea today. And I think that's what's powerful about that.
Yes. The art of networking, right? Or the kind of lost art of it. Even on LinkedIn, you think, oh, I have this network of people, but how many of them do you talk to? It's not the same as going out for lunch with somebody and sharing ideas. And
yeah, for me, that was always the best part of like going to an event for work or something was like, you might go to a massive conference, but it was like, oh, I got an invite to like go have lunch with these five other like directors of marketing at companies who are doing $1 million or less in revenue. And I'm like, yo, who did you guys use for your website? Oh, interesting. And how much did they charge you? Mm. Oh, and we're actually using this. We have this designer in the Netherlands and they're doing this thing. Like, that's where the good stuff happens. And
yeah,
the more that I've learned, it's like nobody has really these secrets. It's just like the smarter people are just more connected and you can get answers quicker without having to guess, right? Like,
true.
It's much easier to do the job the second time around than the first time.
Yeah, for sure. And have you found, have you managed to cultivate that in Exit 5, like the into whatever personal knowledge sharing rather than just
not,
sitting and
not yet, but
it?
It's like one of the big things that we're trying to work on. We're trying to tap into that because I get obsessed over engagement in the community and like one day I'll go in and it's like comments everywhere and everything's good. And then somebody will cancel and be like, I posted something, I got no comments. And I'm like, ah, engagement's down. Everything's broken. This sucks. But then I'll hear from someone who's like, hey, I've never posted ever in my life, but like, I just got a job through Exit 5. And I'm like, what? It's amazing. And so I'm trying to like rethink about how we think about the value of that. Like, it's not, it's never going to have as much engagement as like a viral LinkedIn post, but there's something about connecting peers in there. And so we're trying to like tap into that more this year, whether it's through like mentoring sessions or connecting groups of peers. Like, we could analyze the data and be like, yeah, let me see all the people that are in the UK and work in B2B SaaS and work in finance, in the finance vertical. And let's connect those 30 people in a room over here. I think there's something big there that we can tap into that we haven't done yet.
Yeah. It's like, you know, when you join a Discord group, I actually think that's been a really interesting, I've said this before, when the whole crypto explosion happened, or like the NFT explosion, and everyone was suddenly in 50 Discord groups. It was like, these were sometimes groups that were just created and run by like 13-year-olds, but they were doing such a like the gold standard job of actually creating a community where people were interacting with each other. There was breakout rooms, there was like voice chat breakout rooms with specific discussions. It was almost like going to an event and getting put on like round tables with various people. And I think that is that there's so much that can be learned from those kind of groups. It just doesn't seem to, haven't really seen that anywhere else.
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard to create habits between people and for people to share. Also, when it's like what you're saying, Dave, like sharing tips on like agencies or person, the person you use for like this or that, it's a lot easier for people to be on the receiving end, the reading end of this, than the sharing end of this. So like, you know, we want to, maybe it's easier to take than give when you're in a forum situation. But
I also think about like how I use Reddit as an example. I've never posted on Reddit in my life, but I use it for everything.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
I'm always browsing. And so we use this company called, the app is built on Circle. And yeah, I've been pushing them to be like, I want to see analytics on who's viewed which content. Cause like, I have a theory that it's not like I'm some rocket scientist, but there might be a post that has like 2 likes and no comments, but what if 300 people saw that post?
Yeah.
There's something there to being lurkers. Or I get messages all the time like, hey, I'm a huge fan of Exit 5, but I'm just a lurker.
Yeah. And I think it's almost like you can be tricked if you're in the bubble of LinkedIn into thinking that something that people are getting value from has a large number of visible engagements. So that example you just gave, Dave, I'm on YouTube many hours of the day and I spend way too much time on there, but I absolutely love that channel. And I'll be watching a video and I'll watch it for an hour and I'll get so much value and I'll take notes and I'll be like, fuck, this is amazing. I share it with people, but I haven't done anything visible on that video. I don't like every video that I like. I don't comment on it. I hardly ever comment on a video. So exactly as you say, like in the background, if you look at that video, it's driving tremendous value, but it's almost like, you know, dark social, right? There's all this stuff going on that you can't actually measure. And it could just make you stop doing it, but there are people getting value, but you just can't find that, or you can't see that in an easy way.
Yeah. And I just think there's so much value. Like, I don't want to play the, I think we have an interesting business, but I don't want to play the discussion forum game. It's very hard. There's a reason there's no big, very big engaged communities. They all kind of like, they all die at some point. And so we're pushing hard and like treating this more as a membership than a community, where like the community is part of it. But I think there's lots of value that we can create and add now with the scale that we have and the connections that we have. And so just thinking about how do we connect people in different ways beyond just writing a post, right?
Yeah. That's true.
Wait, can I, how did you two guys get connected and do this podcast together?
We met each other a long time ago. We worked together at the early days of the Facebook ads ecosystem at a Facebook marketing partner. And Yo joined the team. We bonded over. When I spoke to him, he was recently playing bicycle polo. Does that even exist as a sport?
Yeah.
The most hipster of all sports.
And I forgot I was doing that at the time.
And then we've just been friends ever since. And then we went out for dinner 6 months ago, and Yo was like, I've had this idea, I want to start a podcast. I was like, cool. He had the idea, and I've just always been waiting for someone to ask me to.
Cool. I started a podcast 2 years ago, 3 years ago, 2021, by myself. I did 10 episodes, and like most podcasts, I was like, fuck this. This is too much work. Can't do that. Then I parked it for 3 years, and then I was like, I could do this again if we're a little team. And it'll be nice because it'll be like more like a free-flowing discussion, you know, maybe bring like a different dynamic to be three instead of two. We've started it, and then we haven't missed a week. So we even sometimes with two episodes a week. So, you know.
And do you always have a guest, or sometimes it's just you guys talking about
stuff? Just us, yeah. So we pick one topic, and then we do like a shorter, like 30, 20-minute segment on like one tactic or one thing that we want to just jam on.
Cool. No,
they're all right. But it's about frequency. Like, we're trying things like that, because it's like if we post two times a week instead of one time a week, maybe we'll get like another bump in that week.
It's hard. I think in a dream world, like you would have a show that doesn't need guests, and I'm still trying to chase that too, because like it's just so, it would be so great to be able to just be like, let's record today and that's our show. Like, I hate the guest. It's fun to have a guest. The hard part is like, not all guests are good.
Yeah.
Sometimes you're just not up for it. Like, you gotta play, you gotta get up to talking to this person. That's can be hard to do. You gotta have prep. What if they're not just like good at free flowing? And so if it could just be you guys just kind of like riffing, like having a riff on something for an hour, that would be awesome. It's just hard. It's hard to get to that point, you know?
Yeah, it's hard. That was the initial, when we had dinner, we were like, because we were talking about, I remember the glory days when you could do this crazy shit on Facebook. Oh, nobody talks about that. Or most people where I work they're still in school when we could do that stuff. So they didn't even know you could do that shit. But then it's a bit of an ego thing, right? You're like, oh god, are people going to want to just listen to us talking about
stuff? Now I feel cringe when people say like, what do you do? And I mentioned I have a podcast. I'm like, oh, I'm part of that cliche thing. Like, of course you have a podcast.
Of course you do. Like, yeah, or somebody's like, hey, how's your podcast? I'm like, oh my god.
how do you answer that question, right?
Like, I'll be at like a gathering of like parent, friends, or neighbors.
Yeah.
Like, so Dave, you know, Jesse told me you have a podcast. That's cool. Tell me about that. And I'm like, oh no, I can't.
or it's more like, so Johan, how is your podcast? And they're like, put their hand on your shoulder, like, you know, like it's a like it's a pet project, or like a cute thing, you know.
Yeah.
Like,
how's your little podcast going?
Your little podcast.
Are you still doing the little podcast?
How's your blog? Is it like a blog?
Yeah. Oh, marketing. Oh yeah. You know, my brother-in-law does marketing. He's got a marketing podcast as well, actually. And everyone knows someone else who's doing
it. And then I try to just take that. I try to just like be, just like let that go. And I'm like, man, if only people knew that like the Exit 5 podcast on its own would be is an incredible business. But I have no idea, and it's not worth explaining. So I'm just like, yeah, it's good, you know, it's fun.
Yeah, it's hard. I mean, it is effectively it. Oh shit! Sorry, there's a kid's toy going off somewhere. I don't know where it is.
That's amazing. This should be a clip. This is your clip.
Yeah, that could be the clip. Completely lost what I was going to say. Oh well, there you go. Oh no, that's it. Because it is. I mean, it is. kind of like having a, well, it is effectively having a business, right? You there's so much shit that goes on behind the scenes. You have to manage. I mean, it costs money to run a podcast. Everyone seems to think it's free, but it's costing us quite a lot of money to do this. It costs a hell of a lot of time planning the discussions around it, or effectively business meetings. So it's not just something that you kind of do for fun in 10 minutes. It is, we are founders.
Yeah. I feel like I had a list of marketing questions written down. I'm looking at them and I'm like, we are now in and we haven't touched on half of them. But we also don't want to take too much of your time.
GPT. You'd probably have some questions. ChatGPT will answer.
Exactly. Yeah, we don't want to take too much of your time, Dave. It's coming up to the hour.
Sure. I'll give you one. I'll give you one marketing topic that we didn't touch on. I wrote about this in the newsletter that we have this week. Is I think that from a B2B standpoint, I think that the best there's like an 80-20 rule, which is like it's easy to get obsessed with all the tactics and channels. I think the best strategy, I think picking your marketing strategy is the most important ingredient. And I think that the best marketing strategy is to be the go-to resource for the customer that you want to sell to.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you sell HR software, the best marketing strategy is going to position your brand and to become a go-to resource for that HR professional, whether they buy your software or not. Mm-hmm. I think back to myself, like earlier in my career, I religiously read the HubSpot blog and consumed all their content. They made me smarter. Like I had no idea. Mm-hmm. I'm 24 years old and it's like, how do you come up with a marketing plan? I have no idea. Go to Google, come up with a marketing plan. It's a great article from HubSpot. You basically copy that. You make it your own. I present my marketing plan to my team. My boss is like, this is great. And I'm like, yeah, all right, right? But that's the opportunity that HubSpot did with marketers. We did this at Drift. I think whether you sell to finance, HR, sales, engineering, it's like be the go-to resource. Because in B2B, you can't operate transactionally, right? And especially with a considered purchase like B2B, everyone's going to be, they're not necessarily buying, they're shopping. That means they're going to look at three or four other companies, other products, just to do their diligence. Like, we use Riverside for our podcast, but like, let me just look at Zencastr and let me look at this other thing. I just want to compare, right? Yeah. But if it's the company who's making you smarter about your job and giving you content and information, and this isn't just about like writing blog content, it's about having a specific point of view. And I think companies miss this. It's like, if you're going to sell to HR and have a solution for them, you need to have a specific point of view about how you see the world and why that matters, and show that you have a deep understanding of that customer, and then like bring them into your journey. Donald, there's a great book called Story Brand by this guy, Donald Miller. And I use it a lot when I think about positioning. I think positioning, I don't think there's one perfect framework for it. So I like to kind of grab different elements, but he has this kind of journey, and he basically says like you want to be the guide. Like your customer is someone who has a problem. Your brand is the guide. You show them the path. They are Luke Skywalker. You are Yoda, right? You show them the path. You show them the way. You help them achieve the outcome. And then along the way, hopefully they buy from you. I think that's the best approach. And so if you cover up all the channels and tactics and you focus on that, and then you decide where you're going to play, which channels and tactics you're going to use and go play, I think that's the best way to do things.
Love that. It's great. That book doesn't get referenced enough. It's on my bookshelf over there, actually. That's a great one. It was quite funny in that example, right? You'd be like, oh, should I just send my emails through HubSpot, or should I have MailChimp as well? And you're like, HubSpot versus MailChimp. And you read, you're like, oh, okay, so it's the pros and cons of each one. And you get to the end of the article, you're like, fuck, it's on HubSpot.com. And it's suggesting me HubSpot.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You're like, now I don't know. Who do I trust? Who do I trust? Yeah. And then that's why things like G2 Crowd was invented. Yeah, yeah. But then you know that now people can pay and get sponsors. It's a never ending loop. And that is one of the cool things about Exit 5 is like people get recommendations in there. Somebody can go in there and ask that question and be like, no, I hate MailChimp and here's why. All right, cool.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Thank you for giving us an hour of your time.
Thank you very much.
Sure.
Yeah.
And enjoy the rest of your afternoon.
All right, guys. Thank you. See you later.
You're going to sleep.
Cheers, Zach.
Yeah, go to sleep. Go to sleep, guys.